And you point out in the book, Timothy McVeigh was a Gulf War vet, the man
that's
who took out Oklahoma
City.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so that's interesting how this turns back on us. Another thing that's interesting, and I'm reminded of, is you mentioned that there always has to be an enemy.
I know. It's a kind of human condition, I guess, to create something on which to posit or project your aggression, your ignorance, your passion, and always blaming the other, and then, of course, exaggerating and building up a huge, huge fantasy that totally demonizes. You know, not that there aren't, as we see, crazy people out there and destructive people and also experiencing the same thing. But I talk about this in the piece on Rocky Flats, somewhat the warring God realm situation, which is an image from Buddhist psychology and philosophy, this sense of a realm where that's what that's the juice, that's the fuel that you need to keep this thing going, and both sides, of course, are hallucinating each other, and you become the same thing you are. In a way, it's like saying, well, the most aggressive, in the terrible Palestinian-Israeli conflict, but it's when you think of the Holocaust and what the Nazis did, and then to see that same kind of energy is reflected in the most extreme, extremists of the Israeli warmongers. And so that kind of the sense of that energy traveling, that it's not about, who you are culturally. Yes, there are issues over land and property and religion and so on, but it's the same basic human atavistic energy to create, have to create this enemy. And then, of course, we know that the war, as we're seeing in our situation here on the homeland, homeland.
Same thing. War on drugs. Same. War on this. War on that. Yeah.
When we should be fighting the war on poverty, the war on AIDS, the
war on environmental degradation.
Exactly.
Or stop.
No, I feel that we're invoking a war on the planet at this point.
Right.
That's what it's about.
Probably
and
the most
until
important
we,
thing.
Until we see how we're doing that, and of course, any wars will affect the environment.
Yeah. Jung said that Israel has to be. He in fact predicted that they would perpetuate a Holocaust, and that it's the shadow, the whole shadow syndrome.
Well, there's a kind of karmic playing out there, and it these things travel. I believe that.
Through all this, you say that feminine energy is in the ascendant in this country.
Well, I think and as you can see, more women in situations of manifestation and it's not about control necessarily, but as artists, I'm specifically speaking there about women writers and women artists and filmmakers and so on that who are making reclamations. Of course, there have always been women working in these ways, but we need to reclaim some of that history and sense of lineage. But there's I would say that in my experience and growing up in the, really coming of age in the 60s, but going through the 50s and watching the generations in front of me, the women who were around during the Beat Generation, just one example, who would be, locked up if they were different, if they were having an interracial relationship or a child out of wedlock or, had dropped out of college or high school even, often, the mores then were, very, very hard on the lobotomies, putting people, away for years, the suicide rates among, women at that sort of in those nexes of alternative activity. It was, it was a real struggle. So I would say compared to those times, certainly the poetry scene has flourished with, with women really at the controls in so many situations. So I think I'm, speaking of that, but also the, the sense of feminine energy. Feminine energy creates spaces. I talk about putting makeup on empty space, but the sense of allowing things to happen, creating environments for events and work, the actual creative work and community to take place. So there's a kind of atmosphere that I think, feminine energy certainly creates, and I've been involved with those kinds of projects for years, of course.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be represented by women.
I mean, exactly.
So that's what you're saying. I mean, if you talk about feminine energy, we don't think Margaret Thatcher.
We definitely don't.
and you know, you talk about
the Iron Lady.
Yeah, right. You talk about that era that you grew up in and what was expected, you know, the cultural mores, but your mom wasn't like that. In fact, you quote that in the book as saying, if I see you with a baby in a baby stroller, I'll come and shoot you.
I know. Well, she had another idea for me, and she had been a dropout in the 20s and gone off to live in Greece for a decade and was very involved with the, as I describe in one essay, the utopian ideal, this group of folk spearheaded by the poet Angelos Sikilianos, wonderful Greek poet, and his wife Eva, who was from America, to bring back the Greek plays to Delphi, and they wove their own clothing, they made their own sandals, they approximated what the gestures for the dance would have been like by looking at Greek vases, and their vision was that this could change the world, that this would prevent the world from marching into World War II and so on. So this, very touching, and there were some, Luddites to some extent. And that was part of my background. And I think Francis Lefebvre Waldman, Sikilianos Waldman, had a lot of, other ideas for me. So, tall order.
A lot of moxie, as they would say. We're talking with Ann Waldman. She's a poet, teacher, editor, co-founder of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics in Boulder, Colorado. And her new book is Vow to Poetry, Essays, Interviews, and Manifestos. I'm Paul Nelson.